The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com: The White House is rage-baiting us with Sabrina Carpenter. Is it working? This article was written by P. Claire Dodson on December 2nd, and there is a note. In this op-ed, senior editor P. Claire Dodson examines the White House TikTok account's use of music by pop stars, including Sabrina Carpenter, Olivia Rodrigo, and Taylor Swift. It's an honestly diabolical TikTok video. Sabrina Carpenter's Juno plays over a montage. A masked protester holds up an "ice out of chi" sign. Individuals are seen filming on their phones, and law enforcement officers tackle and handcuff various people who look to be Latino. In the last scene, a seemingly armed officer wearing a Border Patrol vest chases a person across a bridge, captured in slow motion like an action hero. The White House logo flashes in white across the screen. The caption reads, "Have you ever tried this one? Bye-bye, love emoji." It's the latest example of the White House's proclivity for pop music. Since November 1, the White House TikTok and Instagram accounts have posted content using songs including, but not limited to, Carpenter's Juno, Charlie XCX's Everything is Romantic audio from the Wuthering Heights trailer, Nicki Minaj's Va Va Voom, ABBA's Gimme Gimme Gimme, Olivia Rodrigo's All-American B, which we'll come back to later, and Taylor Swift's The Fate of Ophelia. The White House official TikTok launched in late August 2025 with a video featuring an ominous Trump announcement, "I am your voice." It has published more than 300 videos in the over 3 months since. Whoever is running the account is churning out presidential highlight reels at a quick clip and using trending audio to do it. It's easy to chalk up social media behavior from corporations or governments or magazines to the work of some unpaid intern. But when a brand posts on social media, there's typically a plan. So why is the White House choosing these artists to soundtrack videos of violence against people who federal agents at least purportedly think are undocumented immigrants? And is the tactic working? Social media promotion, of course, is an algorithmic game. Trending audio tends to bolster visibility. This bears out in the White House's TikTok views. An edit of Trump posing and walking around with Melania set to the viral "Bees in the Trap" / "What's Up" mashup has 16 million views as of this writing. That "Fate of Ophelia" TikTok, seemingly directly edited to go along with Swift's specific chorus lyrics, has 9.7 million views. These numbers are among the account's highest, alongside a video of Trump with Cristiano Ronaldo, 16.9 million. When the account uses pop girls to promote pro-Trump, anti-immigrant policy points, those increased views likely give other videos a boost too, increasing the account's total visibility. Some of these artists have called Trump out directly. In early November, Rodrigo commented on the TikTok with her song on it, "Don't ever use my songs to promote your racist, hateful propaganda." Her comment has since been deleted, and the audio is no longer available. And on December 2nd, Carpenter responded to the White House's video using her song on X, writing, "This video is evil and disgusting. Do not ever involve me or my music to benefit your inhumane agenda." Swift has been critical of Trump in the past, but she has not yet publicly spoken about the White House's use of her music. It's an overgeneralization to call Rodrigo and Carpenter's audiences only teenage girls. They're massive pop performers with massive amounts of fans at this point. But the fandom of teenage girls has been a substantial driver of their success, and it comes with a power and level of engagement that so many would love to exploit, the way some brands did in the late 2010s and early 2020s when they suddenly became K-pop stan accounts. It feels especially notable that both Carpenter and Rodrigo are outspoken about things this administration hates. They are communicating to their audiences regularly that young women have power in the world, that what they think and do matters. Rodrigo said about this year's ICE raids in Los Angeles that she was deeply upset about these violent deportations of my neighbors under the current administration. She's also vocally pro-choice and fundraised for reproductive health care during her Guts World Tour last year. In 2022, she said on stage in D.C., "Our bodies should never be in the hands of politicians." Carpenter, meanwhile, has said that she's donated to the National Immigration Law Center and encouraged her followers to do the same. She has also empowered more than 35,000 voters to get registered with headcount.org during her tour and expressed concern for Americans, particularly women, when Trump won. When you make clear, specific decisions that undermine the agendas of powerful people, they see you as a threat. The best way to neutralize a threat? Pretend you're on the same side. The "is it working" question of all this is harder to answer. It's certainly working for the White House social media accounts if numbers are the goal. But is it working to actually attract young people, kids and preteens and young teenagers who might not have made up their minds politically just yet? The comments sections seem to be flooded with hate about the song choices and proclamations that the artist wouldn't want this, not with young future Republicans obsessing about the use of a Taylor Swift song. It's a classic rage bait for engagement trade-off, and it flattens both politics and pop music in the way social media is just so good at. 21st century chart obsession and the quest for TikTok virality through easy soundbite snippets don't feel dissimilar from how politicians think they can gain and wield cultural soft power to win elections or plot whatever cartoonish evil stuff they're plotting. Sometimes they can. Sometimes you get Kamala is brat. And so the is it working question of the White House TikTok account produces ever more sinister possible answers. This administration's content choices suggest that it doesn't take young people seriously. And if that's indeed the case, then it's not considering your rights or personhood. And if it's not considering the personhood of one group, then it's likely not considering the personhood of many other groups. The White House TikTok account exists to promote its tenet. Here, a 10-second action movie that implicitly paints immigration officers as heroes, or a Trump fan edit set to your favorite song. Smooth-brained consumption, hypnotic distraction by way of pop music. It piles trending audio on trending audio into one endless slop scroll of everything you love and everything you hate, all mixed together. Keep scrolling as ICE raids continue, as some are thwarted, as already marginalized people become at even greater risk of violence and deportation. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com. More than a grade, what students really go through. This article was written by Saskia Kabongo on December 3rd. We've all been there. You click the results page, heart racing, and find a number, a grade that supposedly defines your worth. It never shows the late-night study sessions, the self-doubt, the endless cups of coffee, or the quiet tears after a mock exam. It doesn't reflect the hope you carried, the times you almost gave up and considered throwing your education away due to pressure, and especially how hard you tried. Grades have a strange power. They sit on a screen or a piece of paper, but somehow they feel like a mirror, one that can make you question your ability, your future, even your value. But the truth is, you are more than a number. You are a beautiful human, a creator, who shows up and keeps going, even when it's hard. Those characteristics define us, not the numbers that society believes are the pathway to a successful life. From the moment we start school, success is measured by letters and numbers. Society has turned academic performance into a symbol of intelligence and potential. The higher the grade, the more capable you are seen to be. But what about the effort, the creativity, the drive that doesn't always show up on paper? Social media doesn't make it any easier. We may scroll through posts of aesthetically perfect study desks, acceptance letters, and smiling graduates, and it's easy to feel like everyone else is doing better. But behind those photos are people who feel the same pressure, the same comparison, the same not enough. For many of us with immigrant parents, the pressure hits even harder. Education isn't just about getting good grades. It's about honoring the sacrifices our families made. My parents moved countries, leaving behind everything they knew so that I could have opportunities they didn't have. When you grow up hearing stories of struggle and strength, you carry that legacy with you. But sometimes it can feel like carrying the weight of generations on your shoulders. It is a question of whether I will reach the expectations that my family has of me, or will all the wasted potential go to waste? We talk about grades, but not enough about how our generation is changing what they mean. Gen Z is breaking stereotypes and expectations that have existed for decades. We are starting to talk more openly about mental health, pressure, and burnout, things that older generations often ignored. Now, universities are adapting too. Many have well-being departments that promote healthy living, a positive mindset, and balance. They encourage us to take care of ourselves, to rest, and to speak up when we're struggling. It's a shift, one that's helping a new generation cope with the weight of expectations while learning how to redefine success on our own terms. As we begin to prioritize well-being and self-discovery, we're also learning that success can't be measured the same way it once was. For years, society has told us that success means becoming a doctor, lawyer, or engineer. Those careers are incredible, but they're not the only paths to achievement. In today's world, there are so many routes you can take. Art, English, media, film, subjects that don't always guarantee a traditional job, but shape the world in ways numbers never could. Creative courses are sometimes looked down on, as if passion isn't a valid reason to study something. But grades mean even more when they come from a subject you love. They represent your heart, not just your head. I've always believed that creativity and intelligence work hand in hand. Writing, painting, designing, these are forms of problem solving too. They build empathy, reflection, and imagination. The world needs that as much as it needs science and maths. Success shouldn't be defined by a letter on a paper, but by your impact, your curiosity, and your courage to choose what feels right for you. Here's what I've learned. A grade doesn't define who you are. You can fail an exam and still succeed in life. You can get a low mark and still have endless potential. What defines you is how you grow, how you care, how you show up for yourself and others. You're allowed to rest. You're allowed to take different paths. You're allowed to change your mind. Because education is more than memorizing facts. It's about learning who you are. So, to everyone juggling expectations, trying to make their parents proud, trying to figure it all out, breathe. You're already doing so much more than you realize. When you start to notice your worth beyond a number, you realize the real victory is simply showing up, even when it's hard. So, to every student who stayed up all night and still showed up in the morning, to every student who smiled through disappointment, to every student who chose passion over pressure, this is for you. You are not a number. You are creativity, emotion, effort, and strength. You are late nights, big dreams, and quiet resilience. You are more than a grade. and you always will be. Our next article from the teenmagazine.com. I'm an introvert with a social life. Here's how I find balance. This article was written by Moyin Agbayosi on December 4th. Humans are social animals. Or at least, that's what we're often told. We hear it everywhere, from teachers, psychologists, and even from friends who can't imagine spending a Friday night alone with a book. The message is loud and constant. To be healthy, you need to be social. But what if you don't naturally feel social all the time? What if conversation drains you more than it excites you? What if you're like me, an introvert who actually likes people, just not all at once? Being introverted doesn't mean you lack social skills, or that you're awkward, shy, or anti-people. I learned that late. Growing up, I thought enjoying my own company more than group hangouts meant something was wrong with me. I felt guilty declining invites or stepping out early because I had hit my social limit. But eventually, I learned the truth. Introversion isn't emptiness, but energy management. And with the right balance, social connection and solitude can support each other. 1. I stopped trying to be everywhere at once. When school gets hectic, assignments are due, and studying is piling up, it's impossible to keep up with every event and every friend. In the past, I'd say yes to everything, worried people would think I didn't care. But saying yes to everything meant showing up tired, distracted, and mentally checked out. Now I choose intentionally. I'll pick one social outing every week or two, something I can look forward to instead of dread. Quality over quantity. I give people my best version, not a worn-out leftover. 2. I keep my circle small but meaningful. Some people thrive in big friend groups. I don't. I prefer a few close friendships where conversations can go deeper than small talk. I like knowing the people around me understand that I might not text back immediately, that sometimes I need silence more than chatter. When you surround yourself with people who get you, friendships feel safe instead of exhausting. You don't need many friends. You just need the right ones. 3. I schedule my recharge time like an appointment. After school, dance, studying, and running through deadlines, I just feel so incredibly tired. So I give myself that. Solitude. A solo walk. Journaling. Music with no lyrics, reading, a long shower, lying in bed staring at the ceiling, doing absolutely nothing. Self-care isn't a reward, it's maintenance. The moment I started protecting my alone time, I noticed I was calmer, more present, and more social when I chose to be. Turns out, time alone isn't isolation. It's refueling. 4. I communicate my needs instead of disappearing. One mistake I used to make was not telling people when I needed space. I would withdraw quietly, not because I didn't care, but because I didn't have the energy to explain. That sometimes led people to think I was upset or distant. Now I'm clear. Hey, I'm taking time to recharge a bit, but I would love to do something another time. Just that one sentence can save a friendship from unnecessary drama. 5. I accept that balance looks different every week. Some weeks, I'm a social butterfly. I go out, I laugh a lot, I feel alive around others. Other weeks, I only have the capacity for texts or one-on-one time. Balance isn't fixed, but actually shifts with school workload, my mental space, and how much energy life demands. Instead of forcing myself to match others socially, I've learned to listen to my own rhythm. When I need people, I reach out. When I need silence, I give myself permission to step back. Being an introvert doesn't make someone less social. It simply means social energy runs on a timer. And that timer deserves to be respected. By understanding what drains me and what doesn't, I've learned that solitude and connection aren't opposites. They're partners. One makes room for the other. I show up not everywhere, but fully, where I choose to be. And that, to me, is balance. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.